Jacob assured me I wouldn't be embarrassed by the video. When does that guy get back from Italy anyways? Got a laundry list for him. Well, welcome to the first of four for our pastor's choice. We have videos for each of our presenters each week as we go forward. I have not seen the other ones yet, but after seeing mine, I'm going to be a part of the editing process to ensure that the others get the full experience that I have received with this as well. Yes, I've been asked a few times today already, so yeah, I do have my Sharpie to sign your cards if you need me to. Yeah, we have had a lot of fun with this as we have prepped and gotten ready for it. The point, in fact, it's a kind of a tradition here at Hillcrest, is that we do these pastor choice series in either January or February of each month. The reason why we do it, I kind of give you a little bit of maybe pull back the curtain a little bit into pastoral ministry. But, you know, you probably think every Sunday, well, Pastor Doug, you get to teach on whatever you want to teach on every week. I mean, you're the one doing it. You get to pick whatever you want to pick. If I pick only the things that I wanted to teach on, it would be a very narrow focus. I guess I can make a connection this way. When you watch TV, the kinds of programs that you like, the kinds of things that interest you are narrower than the person you live with or with other people. Some of you, you can't get enough of the Hallmark station. And some of you, like if you went to the church that the pastor preached the Hallmark station sermons, you'd be like, seriously, dude, like, I know your nickname is the Weeper, but let's move on, you know? Some of you like the action shows or the police shows or, you know, whatever genre. You're like the sitcom person. Well, as a pastor, I have to preach messages across the whole gamut. I have to preach messages that I don't care about. Subject matter that doesn't interest me. But it's important for all of us to come together and to kind of branch out on all these various things. So yeah, there are certain series, like the one coming up in February, Jonah. I am fired up personally about that one because I'm going to teach it the way I like to teach, not always the way that you like to be taught. But I can't do that every single time. Pastor's choice is one Sunday in which each one of the teachers gets to teach what they want, how they want, the way they want, the subject they want, and no one can say anything about it. So today is my day. And with the pastor's choice, you get to do everything you want with that Sunday. So each of our presenters are going to custom their week. Next week, I think it is chili Sunday because of the chili cook-off, but Brian's still bringing food in. I think you're bringing in cinnamon raisin biscuits. So you know why? Because he wants to. So Brian's in. The next week is Tarina. Tarina, what are you? Do you know yours yet? What is it? Biscuits and jam, because her message is sweet and salty. See? Sounded a little Hallmarkish. We can emphasize that salty. Yeah. And then Jacob. Well, who knows? The guy is still in Italy. So, so today, the title of the message is a little bit of an odd title. It's Theology, Blessing or Curse. Probably doesn't grab your attention. I don't care. Because today, I want to talk about theology, so that's what we're going to do. Now, I don't want to talk about theology today from an intellectual perspective or an intellectual angle, but I want to talk to it from more of an attainable, practical angle. What is theology? If you're following along, you're fill-in. Make sure I'm controlling this. I am? Thank you. Pastor's choice probably should have been to throw this thing in the trash can. Theology is the study of God. Theo, God, ology, study. The study of God. This is not something that just has to be academia. All of us have theology. All of us have some understanding, some thought, some belief, some guiding idea or principle about God. More narrowly, if I want to say what is theology, I would say within Christianity or within Christendom, theology is a study of the right Christianity against the wrong kind of Christianity. This is what we hear most when we bring up theology, is that some people have the right theology and some people have the wrong theology. Even a weak old Christian, a brand new Christian, can quickly discern that there are right ideas about Christianity at the church that they go to, and that others have wrong ideas about Christianity. One of the most amazing things, it's just baffling how it happens, but whatever church you happen to be going to is the church that has the right theology. Have you noticed that? Like Hillcrest has the exact perfect theology. All other churches are flawed in some way. The problem is when you go to those churches, they'll tell you they have the exact right theology, even though you came from a church that assured you that they too had the right theology. No matter where you go, we have this tension within our Christian culture. Now, don't think this is just a current phenomenon, like this is just a new thing that's happened, for this is as old as humanity. Even in the Garden of Eden, remember Adam and Eve? Adam and Eve were tempted or tricked by who? Satan, the serpent, yeah, the devil. And this serpent, what did he tell Adam and Eve? What was the trick he was trying to tell them? That if they eat the fruit, the forbidden fruit, that what would happen? In short, that they would be like God. A theology that was different from the theology that they understood about God. In the very beginning, people have been trying to convince us, or people have had twisted types of theology. And which is the right and which is the wrong? Adam and Eve chose wrong. And you know how that ended up. What is the right theology? Is there a correct theology? Throughout church history, I want to just be as honest as I can with you here. Theology, thoughts and study and beliefs about God have been the foundation for killing, for genocide, for wars, for crusades, for abuses, for both the giving and taking away of people's salvation. Theology has the power to give both peace and fear. Theology has the power to give both love and hate. It designates between the haves and the have-nots. It communicates who will go to heaven and who will go to hell. That is, if you disagree with their theology. The level of wrong, or the level of wrong theology that someone has, when it's presented against someone's, what they believe, correct theology, they can be so opposed to that different perspective or that different theology that history will show that many have been excommunicated from the church as a result of this, expelled from the church, and even removed from this earth, if you catch my drift, if you refuse to be silenced in your kind or brand of theology. Ooh, that's a lot of accusations. It's also a lot of accusations with no data or facts to support it. And I despise it when someone gives me a bunch of passionate speech about something, but doesn't give any foundation or any data to back it up. Now, I realize that not all of you are data people. I'm a data freak. I love data. I don't even need an emotional story. I just need the facts, I need the data, and I make my decision upon that. So today, I want to give you some data, realizing that I may bore a few of you with data, but it's pastor's choice, so it's what I'm going to do. I want to tell you something. I try to think through what's one thing I could point to that would be authoritative in this idea of the trouble that theology has had within the church. Because again, theology, is it a blessing or a curse? I would say that if I was to put it in a nutshell and say this is the best illustration I can point to, it's denominationalism. Denominationalism is all the different denominations and how they came into being. Now, I can't lump everybody together, but for the most part, this has been the case with denominationalism, is that different denominations are born out of other denominations, not out of love, not out of, hey, go start something. We want to bless this. It starts because there's disagreements on theology. And so one church, there's a disagreement that starts within that church, and then there's a split that happens. And a part goes off and starts doing their thing separate from this group. And because there was a split, a tension split, where we said, we can no longer be with you, we have to start our own thing. Do those two groups, do you think, work well together? No, they don't. And throughout history, even before the Reformation, but the Reformation really started it. When the Protestant Reformation started with Martin Luther, there was a split from the Catholic Church. And the reasons that those splits happened were great reasons because there were abuses that were taking place. But it split away and a group started their own thing. And they were called the Protestants because they protested. And so the Protestants, which we're a part of, are like rebirthing DNA is to protest. And we've been protesting ever since with one another. And we just continue to split off and continue to split off. In fact, after Luther split off from the Catholic Church, he and this guy named Calvin were together, and they split. And they split off these crazy nuances of the Lord's Supper and where God's presence was. Is it in the bread, or is his essence around it, or is he kind of nearby it? Like, these are the things they argued about, and they split. And so then you had the Lutherans and you had the Calvinists or the Reformed. The Methodists followed the theology of John Wesley and his methods of spiritual maturity. Presbyterians separated over church structure. Baptists separated over the theology of baptism and how it's done and what that mode is and when it should be done. Each denomination has a slightly different doctrine or emphasis from the other denominations. Such as whatever that method or mode of baptism might be, whether the availability of the Lord's Supper is closed only for some or open to all, whether your faith can be your faith or whether it has to be verified by church leaders, or the sovereignty of God versus the free will in the matter of salvation. Churches split over the future of Israel or the church. Or churches split, or theological ideas surround pre-tribulation versus post-tribulation rapture. Or whether there's the existence of sign gifts that are still here today, or whether those were from a different era, and so on and so on. It's endless, the amount of things that you can say that we have divided on over the years. And the vast majority of these groups do not get along. They do not work together. In fact, sadly, many of them will say that these other groups are outside of the faith, or that they are not true Christians, that they are not saved because of these different ideas and beliefs and theologies that they hold. I have personally experienced this here at Hillcrest. Sure, I'm almost 20 years here at Hillcrest, but I have had people tell me to my face that I am a tool of Satan because I use the wrong Bible translation when I teach. And they were dead serious. You might have remembered a few years ago when a group that had that same belief was picketing in our parking lot. Do you remember that? You came in, they had signs at the entryway. And I went out there to say, what are we doing? Is this what the body of Christ is supposed to look like? But you see, I was on the wrong side of the issue. I was in the wrong. And so they had an obligation to tell the world. Theology. I've been told that because I'm not reformed in my theology, that because of that, that those churches cannot work with our church or cannot work with me because our theology is wrong in relationship to theirs. Today, the World Christian Encyclopedia states this, that there are 33,820 Christian denominations in existence. Luther split, that was one. And we have continued to protest as Protestants 33,820 times. And I would argue, though there may be a few, most are not good. Jesus told Peter, on you I will build my church. And that church has split 33,820 times, and I don't think for the good of the gospel. denominationalism is my illustration of evidence that theology, when we say is it a blessing or a curse, has been a struggle for the church as to what to do with the different ideas that we have about God and how that plays in and how we work with one another. So what went wrong? Pastor Brian alluded to this, but as I completed my seminary education, 3 years is what it takes to get a Master of Divinity. I was going to the seminary here in town, and in the last semester, we had a class called Theology 2, which was different than Theology 1. In Theology 2, we had to write a paper, and this was a theological paper that really summed up where we were theologically. Whatever our theology was, that we were going to go into the world and go into the church or whatever it was, you had to communicate this in this paper. The title of my paper was Theology, Blessing or Curse. That was the title of it. And I turned in this paper that I felt kind of fired up when I wrote it. I felt awesome when I delivered, when I presented my paper. And as the professor, who I respect him tremendously, as my professor started to read my paper, he started using a red pen to write in the margins. And pretty soon he was circling things. And pretty soon he was pointing me to research. And he was talking about theologians I had never heard. And as the paper went on, it got fuller and fuller. By the third page, he is writing as much as I am because you had to turn my paper over and he continued to write. And the last two pages, no comments at all. And he said this to me. I cannot grade your paper. You do not get a grade for this paper. It is not gradable. Because I was challenging this issue or these struggles of theology and what it's done in the church and how it has impacted church history over the years. And I was set to not graduate. I was working here. You guys, all of you here, you were kind of expecting I was going to finish that gig. Those that had been financially helping and supporting me for seminary, they also were expecting I was going to finish this gig. And the hoops I had to go through, the extra work I had to go through to prove that I wasn't completely insane, but they were so scared that this guy would go into a church with these kinds of thoughts. They never left me. You see, as I was studying this issue way back then, and as I've continued to look at it now, I've been struck by a few powerful things. There's an individual by the name of Karl Barth. Now, anyone here know who Karl Barth is? Show of hands. Karl Barth fans? Come on, keep. I want to see. One, two, no center section. Three, four. Did I miss somebody? No, not you two. Four of us in the back. Oh, Burke didn't see you. Five, of course. Burke's got Karl Barth. Karl Barth. So that's Karl Barth. Now you're like, oh, Karl Barth. Karl Barth is a brilliant individual. Karl Barth spent his life on theology, and very specifically, systematic theology. And he wrote a 13-volume systematic theology mass called Church Dogmatics. Yeah, stimulating reading, by the way. 13 volumes. He is smarter than anyone in this room and maybe smarter than any 10 of us combined. Might even be smarter than Google. If Karl Barth comes up with a theology, I would challenge any of us to go against that theology. He was a Swiss Reformed theologian. Am I Reformed in my theology? I already said that at the beginning of this message. Am I Reformed in my theology? No. Do I agree with Karl Barth? No. Because I'm smarter than Karl Barth. Karl Barth wrote this, and it was supposed to be kind of like the door, like shut the door, like this is it, folks. I mean, this is correct theology. And you know what blossomed after that? I'll use the word blossomed. Is everybody else's systematic theology that they wrote. No one could could go as big as 13 volumes. He is the king for the biggest systematic theology mass. But everybody else wrote theirs to combat Karl Barth. And I guarantee that all those people that wrote those are still smarter than you and me. And some of those that wrote, they write from my perspective. So I buddy up with them. I'm like, yeah, that's my stuff. That's what I believe. Do you see the tension that's there? How do we know we have the right theology? How do you know that you have the right theology or that I have the right theology? The thing about theological arguments over the centuries is that it becomes an intellectual competition with your eternal destiny at stake. That's the problem with theology. It's not just intellectual. It's an intellectual discussion or argument or debate with your eternal destiny at stake. So people really are invested in proper or correct theology, or what they believe to be. Here's the truth about us insecure humans. Ever wonder why it's so hard to change someone's belief in something? Do you struggle with that? Someone believes something, you're trying to convince them of something else? It's hard. The truth is that the harder that you try to convince that someone's belief is wrong or their misconceptions, it actually can strengthen that person's argument. They feel stronger in their argument the more you try to convince them otherwise. Some of you are looking at each other. Why is that? Spouses are looking at spouses. Psychology calls it the backfire effect. In other words, the more you try to prove someone wrong, the more they believe that they're right. And now you know why raising kids is so hard. Here's a crazy real-life example. In one study, when the CDC worked at convincing and proving that the flu shot was safe, they did a research afterwards, a study of people, and they discovered that people became less willing to get it after they tried to convince people that it was safe. It's the backfire effect. When someone tries to prove you wrong, you feel attacked. In fact, science has also studied the brain, and they take people that are trying to change their opinion on something, and they discover that it actually triggers the part of your brain that produces pain. It's actually painful to be wrong or be trying to, someone convincing you that you're wrong about a certain idea. It hurts. Being proven wrong is so powerful in our emotions, it triggers the fight or flight response. And you see this. When you're trying to argue with someone, they will either fight back to all kinds of intense levels, or they will run away and even disown you or your relationship or drop it all together because of the tension of that discussion. In fact, science psychology also says that we have this need to protect our identity. And what we believe is who we are. So when you confront that belief, you're confronting our identity, and we want to protect that. They call it the identity protective cognition. The more powerful or significant the outcome of our beliefs, whatever they are, if they're religious. If it's something about politics, it's about politics. And that's why both religion and politics are so polarizing, and it's why they cause such a strong response in debate, is because we're trying to protect this identity protective cognizance in us. The only way that I believe that we can ever change the minds of another person is by doing really what Jesus did when he challenged people and what intelligent people have been doing for years. And that's to raise questions that challenge the perceptions that people have and allow them to change or challenge themselves. Some people may say that Christians are hateful bigots. Have you heard that before? But if that person who says Christians are hateful bigots experiences a Christian that is accepting and loving, they will be challenged to change their position. Not through an argument, but through raising the question through our actions and the way we interact. So back to theology. Is there a correct theology? Is there a single correct way to do baptisms? Is there a single correct way to do evangelism or communion or worship? Well, maybe so. You see, I have beliefs, and I have really good reasons for the things that I believe. And I might even be able to convince you of some of those things that I believe. That is, if I can avoid stepping on your identity protective cognition. But I also understand, and I hope you understand, that there are good Christians who love God and believe the Bible to be true and authoritative, that practice and believe differently than you do, different than I do, and different than Hillcrest does. And I have to have grace for their bad theology, as I hope they have grace for my bad theology. Paul had this to say to the church in Rome. He said, in Romans 11, 33 through 36, he said, "Oh, how great are God's riches in wisdom and knowledge. How impossible," really emphasize that word, "how impossible it is for us to understand his decisions and his ways. For who can know the Lord's thoughts? Who knows enough to give him advice? And who has given him so much that he needs to pay it back? For everything comes from him and exists by his power and is intended for his glory. All glory to him forever. Amen." Paul is as clear as he can possibly be here that it is impossible for us to fully know God theology. It is impossible. His thoughts and his ways are different from ours. Paul has left us an understanding, and Jesus has left us a clear picture. God has left us through the scriptures a very clear picture that we are to do what as followers of Jesus? Hillcrest, tell me, what are we to do? Thank you. Love God and love others. And love others as we, what? Love ourselves. All the other stuff we can get tied up on, but this is the one I want us to remember. That though we may be confused on different theologies and modes of this and who does this and how we do that, that we are all in agreement and understand that the clear thing that Jesus said, he said, if you reduce it all down, all the prophets, all the teaching, all the theology, it is what? Love God and love others as you love yourself. I believe that if we do this, we will win. Because some of our theology starts to split hairs. Some of our theology dissects nuance in meaning and practice. But Jesus said to be baptized, right? Did Jesus say be baptized? Did he say how? I mean, we saw him be baptized by immersion. We see immersion through the scriptures. That's why I do immersion, and I want to convince you immersion is all good. But Jesus said be baptized. So can you make room for another way of baptism? Not that one! Would a pour or a sprinkle nullify someone's baptism? You see, maturity in faith is knowing what you know and being okay with what you don't know. Paul is also clear that the Bible is our source for knowing God in a specific revelational way. The Bible teaches us and guides us. 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17 says this, "All scripture is inspired by God and is useful to teach us what is true and to make us realize what is wrong in our lives. It corrects us when we are wrong and teaches us to do what is right. And God uses it to prepare and equip his people to do every good work." The Bible is useful. What's it useful for? To teach us, to prepare us, to equip us. For the purpose of being a good person, doing good works, loving others. That's what the Bible is for. It's not for the purpose of being right. Do you see that in here? Love God, love others, and allow room for nuance of practice. So is theology a blessing or a curse? You want my answer to that? The answer is yes. It is. Let me ask it this way. And I don't mean to be political as I ask this, but these are the thoughts that come into my mind. It's pastor's choice, so I'll say it how I want. Do guns kill people or do people kill people? Do knives kill people or do people kill people? Does a car kill people or does the person driving the car? Is money good or bad? Or is it what someone does with the money they have? You see, it falls down to us It's not that theology is bad, the thinking or the study of God, but sometimes what us as people do with that theology is where the problem comes in. In fact, theology is unavoidable. Anyone here, not all of you will probably raise your hand, but if this is you, please be confident and raise your hand. Has anyone here ever even thought about God? Some of you have not yet. That's theology. You thought about God. Each one of you have a theology. Each one of you have a belief system, right or wrong. Yours could be completely left field. It's your theology. Some of you could have very highly trained theologies. Some of you could be Karl Barth students. Some of you could go to seminary and go all the way through seminary and just feel like at the end, I'm going to have this amazing theology and write a paper that they can't even grade. You all have theology. What do you do with the theology that you have in relationship to the person next to you or the other denomination or the church down the street or your brother or your sister or your mother or your father or your children and their theology? I think for all of us, we need to come to our faith and our theology with two things in mind. And I want to leave you with this. All theology must start and end with Jesus. What do I mean by that? The non-negotiables is that Jesus is the Son of God, okay? If your theology is something different than that, that is something for us to discuss, but that changes our definition of Christianity. That salvation comes through Jesus and Jesus alone, okay? Our theology has to start with Jesus. Salvation is through Christ and Christ alone. It's not through what you do. It's not what you think. It's not how many times you go to church. It's not how many times you've read the Bible. It doesn't matter if you know Bible studies. It doesn't matter if you serve in church. Those are all great things, and they're all part of our faith. But the key thing when it comes to your theology and my theology and making sure that we understand what it means to be a Christian, what is theology when it comes to Christianity, it's that salvation is through Jesus and Jesus alone. Would you agree with that? Now, everybody wants to throw something on top of that. But I'm going to say that's the base. Okay? What do we do with every single thing that goes on top of that? Because that's a lot of stuff. Like snake handlers. Right? I'm just being totally crazy left field. Okay? All the other people that are wrong, which honestly, that's every church but us. Okay? So, all their bad theology. What do we do with it? We need to give grace and allow people to express their emphasis of faith. So when it comes to baptism, dunking, sprinkling, pouring, whether it's public or private, whether it's in a tank or river, whether it's a baby or an adult, they all have their beliefs in baptism. You have yours, I have mine, Hillcrest has hers. But can we give grace to the different perspectives that other people have? Communion. Open communion, closed communion, transubstantiation, consubstantiation. You even know what those are? A lot of people do and can't get along because of those big words. Whether they use wine or juice, whether they do it monthly, weekly, daily. Grace. And where we're different. Worship. Does worship happen on Sunday or Saturday? Is it traditional? Is it contemporary? Is it only organs? Does it include those Satanistic drums? Is it only a cappella? Because really, that's how they really did it, right? A cappella only. Is it long? Is it short? Are the messages long or short? Well, here they're long. Are they topical? Are they exegetical? Do you use the King James Version, the NIV, the NLT? Do you wear jeans or a suit? Dresses? Women, do you cover your heads? Do women teach in the church or only men? Nuances, differences, grace. Must be grace. Jesus and grace. That is my theology. This is what I practice. And this is how I lead Hillcrest, through Jesus and grace. We have a theology here, don't get me wrong. We're not wishy-washy, and we're firm. We have tradition here at Hillcrest. And there are those that don't like our theology here, don't like my theology. That is completely okay. There are churches that do it differently than we do it. That too is okay. There is room in the kingdom of God for every one of God's children. But we must be his children of Jesus and grace. We can discuss, we can debate, we can even try to convince each other of our theological perspectives and positions. But it must be done with love as the goal and the object of our discourse. Love has to lead the way. The scriptures tell us that the world will know that we are Christians by our what? Love. And 33,000 denominations does not communicate that to the world. And the world is confused about Christianity because we've forgotten how to love each other. Jesus and grace. So let it begin with me. Let it begin with Hillcrest. Let it begin with us.